Today's episode is brought to you by Bululu Studios. Bululu Studios is a small event space located in Savannah, Georgia. It is the perfect location for MFA thesis shows. For more information, please visit bululustudios.com. That is BULULUstudios.com.
Thank you for listening to The Strand. In this episode, I have a conversation with Robin Maya, a photographer who lives and works in Savannah, Georgia. We talked about her upcoming exhibition that will be held at Cedar House Gallery in Savannah, Georgia. Opening night for this show is June 14th, and you can learn more about her work at robinmaya.com or follow her on Instagram at robinbirdie. All episodes of The Strand are found on most podcast platforms, including Spotify and Apple. Stay up to date with upcoming episodes by following the podcast on Instagram at Strand Podcast. I am also on Instagram at Kevin Wapaint. Also, next month, for two nights only, May 22nd and 23rd, the Ships at Sea Maritime Museum is hosting an event titled Celestial Seafarers. I will exhibit my work there along with a few other Savannah artists. Learn more about Celestial Seafarers by visiting shipsofthesea.org. And now, here's my conversation with Robin Maya. Robin, thanks for stopping by and telling me a little bit more about your work.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Where can people find you online?
My website is robinmaya.com. Super easy. And my Instagram is robinbirdie. R-O-B-I-N-B-I-R-D-Y.
Where's the birdie come from?
It actually comes from when I was in high school. I had to go to an institution for a while, which I'm not shy about talking about. It's influenced my work a lot. But everybody there called me Birdie because there was a boy named Robin on the other side, and Birdie became my nickname. And we weren't allowed to share our information because of HIPAA laws, because we were under 18. Mm-hmm. So I just told everybody to look up Robin Birdie when they got out, and I changed my Instagram username to Robin Birdie, and it stuck for a long time now.
Sweet. What do you make?
I always call myself a photographer and artist of sorts because I think photography is kind of my springboard, and that's like the basis of all of my work, but I think I take it a lot further than just photographs that are framed on the wall. I think what really kind of drives me to want to do photography is what can come after. So the tactile objects I can make with, whether that's printing processes of historic processes like cyanotypes, or using film photography and printing in the darkroom and everything, or making objects like a piece that I'm making right now that is large. They're essentially baby blocks, but of different sizes. And those are cyanotypes that are turned into baby blocks and is now being made into a sculpture. So
what scale are they in general?
They kind of range. The smallest ones are about, I'd say, an inch on every side, and then they go up to 5 inches. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of each size. And then they're being put together to create a large scale installation piece or sculpture, I should say.
Right on. Does it have a home yet, or like in the future?
Yeah, I have a show coming up this summer, actually.
Where at? What's going on?
Cedar House Gallery. Mm-hmm. That's where my studio is right now.
Oh, cool.
On June 14th. It's called Exodus is the name of the project. I've been working on it for 3 years almost, or a little bit over 3 years actually now. And it kind of started after the completion of a body of work I did called Home Away from Home. And it really got its like footing and everything when I was in the residency program through SCAD called the Alumni Atelier. I did that October 2021 until February 2022. Mm. So that's really the space that project really grew. And I've been working on it ever since. And now it finally has a home and a place that it's going to come to life. And that piece is a part of that. But to answer what you said of what I do photography, but I don't call myself a sole photographer. It's photographer and artist of sorts in any business matter, just because I think that I wouldn't say that photography is the only thing I want to do. I don't want to just take pictures and print them and put them on the wall. I want to make things with them that you wouldn't expect. And that's kind of what this whole body of work entails, is photos and also tactile objects made with my images.
So talk more about that then. What are those objects?
Yeah.
And maybe the process that you do to make them.
Okay. So basically this show is going to be split up into two rooms physically, but also two kind of mental spaces of childhood and womanhood. And the womanhood room that I'm also kind of calling the epilogue and prologue, epilogue or the womanhood room is very much so photographs printed and framed on the wall because of the simplicity of it, since the images have a lot of emotional weight to them. So I figured just having an image on the wall would kind of give you a second to breathe and have a moment to sit with the images versus dissect what the objects even are. But then the childhood room is all about the objects, and that kind of goes into the idea of children when they're learning how to, I guess, be a human, and they're tactile and they want to hold things and they want to put things in their mouth and they want to feel things with their hands. That's kind of where a lot of this idea comes from. So I'm working with a lot of different materials. So one of the things that's one of the more simple pieces in this room is screen printed childhood photographs. But instead of just scanning in the photographs and printing them, I had to make it a lot harder on myself. And I wanted the photographs to be mine. So for that process, I basically had childhood photographs pinned to the wall and photographed them with my 4x5 wooden camera. So it's like a Victorian camera. You go under the big cloak and everything. Yeah. And re-photographed my childhood photos in black and white film, developed those, scanned them, turned them into an image that was just like I erased the background. Mm-hmm. So it's just one piece of the photograph, and then printed those on transparencies, shot them on a screen, and screen printed them on paper to start. So there's 10 of those in the show, or will be. They're already made, but the show hasn't happened yet, obviously. Yeah. And then I took that further and used those same screens to do repeated patterns on canvas. So really large stretches of canvas that are just overlaid multiple times. I couldn't tell you how many. And those pieces of canvas have now been turned into multiple pieces from smaller scale kind of stepladder pieces, or like a gallery wall type of thing, that is probably the best way to describe it. And then also other pieces that are more about the deconstruction of the canvas. So the act of like shredding it and cutting it up and putting it in different spaces. So there's that. That's also in it. Another piece is, I've just been calling them resin photo cubes because I don't really have another word for them. But those are child photographs. The same ones that I re-photographed were then printed in the darkroom, just as basic contact prints, nothing crazy, and cut those and put them into molds to create these little resin photo cubes. I don't really know what to call them, but they're really interesting because they weren't curing how I needed them to. So I actually sprayed them with the resin coating that kind of helps it in that process. And then they looked like shit. Okay. So can I curse?
Yeah.
Okay. They looked like shit. And so I sanded them down, and then it gave a really interesting effect that wasn't exactly what I had hoped for, but now I like them even more because they're actually now, they're harder to see the photo from the front of it, but then when you turn it to the side, it's like a distorted image. So it's kind of cool. And I've always said I kind of let my materials take over if I feel like they're pushing that. And that's kind of what happened with this one, was that it went into a different direction, and I think it actually works better now as a piece. And then,
so you just have like an open mind when you're making the work.
Very
like
much so.
Just running with whatever,
yeah,
wherever the piece wants to go.
No, 100%. I always have kind of said like my starting with a medium is on me, but the ending is on the material itself, because you can plan for something and it's probably not going to work how you want it to most of the time. And that kind of happened with the next piece that I did, was cyanotypes on fabric. So it's on different articles of like baby clothing, and then toned in tea. I always tone my cyanotypes in tea because I'm not a big blue person and all my work is black and white. So I think the toned down kind of historic looking tea toned ones look better for my work. So that's what those are. Those are in that room. And then, like I mentioned, the cyanotype baby block mobile.
Right.
It's long descriptions just because there's a lot to them, but I will say that each piece in that room is kind of 10 steps that got to that point, especially with the fact that I had these family photos and I photographed them with the camera and developed them and scanned them and did things with them instead of just scanning in the photograph and using it like a normal person probably would. But I definitely work with tactile things, and I like to be able to hold a photograph in my hands, not just in the way of a print, but I think a print does so much for an image. Even today, going to look at my prints that are being made for my show, I've been looking at those photos for almost 3 years on a computer screen, and then seeing them printed is a completely different experience that just kind of takes you into the photograph. And I think that using objects with photographs does the same thing, but in just a, not a better way or a worse way, but just in a completely different way. I think it's like listening to a band with your headphones versus seeing them live. It's a different experience. So
what's the scale of the photos?
They range. So the smallest photographs in that room will be 24 by 24, and the two biggest are 40 by 55. And those are all going to be framed, so they'll look even bigger, I think.
Right. Yeah, nice. Have you already printed them?
Yeah, they're being finished up today, actually. Parker Stewart's doing my printing, and he's wonderful. And I got to come by and take a little sneak peek, and took everything in me not to cry because I was so excited to see them.
Awesome.
But
congratulations.
Thank you. Those will be finished up this week, and then I'm bringing them to the framers, and then we go from there.
Cool. So where did you grow up? I know that you're based out of Savannah, but where did you grow up, or what does that play into your work at all?
100%. Usually when people ask me that, the quick answer is the South, just because I kind of hopped around a little bit. But the South as a whole definitely has influenced my work. I was born in South Florida and lived there until I was about 6 or 7. And then when Hurricane Katrina happened, my parents both were from the Gulf Coast, between, like, they were in Mississippi and back and forth to New Orleans with family and everything. And with my mom working in nonprofits almost my whole life, we went back and she was working with them to rebuild the coast. We were there for a while in South Mississippi, definitely had an influence on my work. As a gay woman living in South Mississippi, it was definitely a different experience. Even though I was young, I hadn't come out yet or anything, but I knew that it was not a place that I necessarily belonged, even though it'll always have a sense of home to me because that's where my whole family lives on both sides. And going back there is definitely very nostalgic, but I knew I didn't belong there. And that had an influence in my work for sure.
When you lived in South Florida, what part?
West Palm, and then Fort Lauderdale for a while too.
Do you know of a place called Branches?
I don't think so.
No, it's a nonprofit. I just was throwing.
I was so young when I lived there. We left before my 7th birthday. We left in August, before my 7th birthday. So I was only there for a little bit, but that also somehow feels, I feel like I was in South Florida for decades.
How does being from the South inform your work then? If you said that it absolutely informs it.
I think in one way it influenced my work because of kind of the never ending desire to find home. And I think I found that in Savannah, but for years the constant kind of bopping around made me feel a little bit like after 2 years you have to go somewhere else. And because after Mississippi and my parents divorced and we went to Orlando, and my mom and my sister, I went to Orlando, and my dad went to Dallas. And then when I graduated high school, my parents moved to Daytona, and then I moved to Savannah. It was kind of just, even in the house I'm in now, after being there for a year, I was just kind of like, I don't have to leave, actually.
Oh, okay.
I had that fear, like, and coming up on my 1 year anniversary of living in that house, I had this anxiety that was sitting on my belly, and I was like, what is this coming from? And it was this weird feeling that I felt like I had to move on, and I didn't. I realized, like, oh, if I'm happy here, I don't have to leave. It's just that childhood, not trauma, but that childhood cycle was sticking with me. And I think that that's had an influence on my work more than I think it has, because I've had a hard time with resonating any place as like a definitive home for me. Not that I ever will, for sure. Savannah's the closest I've gotten, but it's interesting how I notice it in my work at different times. And most of my work is photographing kids and families and photographing their stories and their childhoods. And a lot of the time I feel like my childhood was a little bit displaced, and it's very cathartic to be able to photograph children in places that, I mean, obviously their lives aren't perfect, but to me as a grown-up now looking at them, it's very special to be able to capture these happy moments and these sad moments and these pivotal moments that I kind of feel like I missed out on, which I didn't, but at the same time, we moved school so much that I never quite felt like I found my home and my people. And by doing that here, I feel like I am. I feel like I'm giving that back to my younger self. And I love kids. I've always loved kids. Anybody who knows me knows I'll say that and calls me the baby whisperer. And being able to photograph them really is just, I don't know, it feels kind of a void in me that I haven't quite put a finger on yet. And I know I have some ideas of where that void comes from, but it's definitely kind of influenced the work of wanting to document kids in a way that is authentic to their story. You were asking about the influence of the South on my work. And yeah. I think a big part of it is on the children, like I said. And I think also just, I think the romanticism and like the darkness that surrounds the South, like we see the South as such a beautiful place, even Savannah, it's a stunning city, but there's this dark history to it. And I think a lot of my work kind of says that same story, even though it's not the same content, because even this body of work, Exodus, is about childhood trauma and the process of growing up. And that work is not to say that my childhood was horrible and awful and all bad, but to say that despite all of those things, there was a hidden darkness there that I've spent years figuring out what it was. And I use this body of work to figure out what it was, versus in the past, I would have this trauma that happened and then make work about it. And this was more so using a body of work to help uncover what happened, mixed in with writing and making things and using it as an outlet and as a catharsis for processing the things that were coming up. And I think that the South kind of has influenced that in a way that might not make sense, but it seems to make sense to me, of just this underlying thing that nobody really wants to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, also family. Family is a huge influence, of course, with the work that I do.
One of my coworkers, she's a lesbian, and she's often saying comments about the South and trying to navigate through those waters.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that kind of speaks to maybe what you're saying.
Yeah, in a lot of ways it does. Even going home to Mississippi and seeing my family, it's interesting because as soon as I kind of get back into that setting and I'm at my family's house and everything, I feel like the black sheep of the family often, not just because of being gay, but because of the things that have happened to me. And I'm the one that moved away and didn't stay in Mississippi. And I'm the one that is an artist. Meanwhile, nobody else in my family is an artist. And it's just kind of interesting. Like I chose a very different path from the rest of my family. And I love that.
I'm the same.
Yeah. I'm happy that I did, but it's kind of, I've just always felt like I'm on the outside within my family and also just within the places that I've lived until I got to Savannah. But Savannah's been kind of interesting. It obviously came for art school, so there's all kinds of different people and a wide range. And also Orlando was a lot better for me than Mississippi because of that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that there's still that segment or that part of being here that still feels not unwelcome. That's the wrong word. But how I'm talking about the South influencing that work and how you just said, like, not only is it about being gay in the South, but it's also just the being different wasn't so welcoming in Mississippi where I was. And I mean, I had divorced parents. I knew I was gay. I was mentally unwell and I was an artist. So I just had all these things kind of working against me in the school system that I think influenced my work and who I am as a person a lot more than I think it did until I started making this work and realizing that the things that I'm looking back on for that caused pain to be able to make work about are things that I hadn't ever really thought about as things that hurt me or things that had stuck with me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're trying to bring everything to the forefront, right?
Yeah. Bringing things to the forefront and realizing that the things that stuck with me the most were not the things I thought they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that the things that I'm making work about and the memories that I'm holding on to were ones that I had brushed off thinking that, oh, that didn't affect me as much as it did. And thinking that this body of work is about this one thing when actually it's not. It's about something completely different that seemed so small in the scheme of things, but actually affected me a lot in the long run.
So in your upcoming exhibit or exhibition, you have, you mentioned something about childhood, but also womanhood.
Mm-hmm.
And you're documenting children or families also.
Not in this project. No.
Right, right. But I'm curious, do you get to make multiple shots? Like, is there a couple of families or specific families that you've been able to document from like childhood or, you know, as their teens or whatever that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of my favorite things about this job is being able to watch kids grow and having a front row seat to their childhood and being able to witness that. And there's a lot of families that I've been able to photograph long-term. My senior thesis show, The Home Away From Homework, was documenting a family for 3.5 years. I was basically like a nanny for them and also was photographing them as I went. The whole story was about the whole family, but more specifically about Ruby. The family has an older daughter, Alexa, and then twins, Ruby and Ava. And Ruby is nonverbal autistic and has cerebral palsy. So I was kind of standing in as like a respite care nanny while also photographing them. And that was obviously long term. I started right before their 6th birthday and now they're 12. So it's very interesting.
That's great.
I haven't photographed them in a while, but in the time that I was, it was long term. And then there's a set of identical twins, Danny and Benny, that live in Mississippi. And their mom used to babysit me growing up and we've stayed in touch and everything. And I've been photographing them since November 2018, I believe. And I photograph them every year now in November and in the summer to kind of document them. They're mirror identical twins, so same height and weight since the day they were born. They lose their teeth on the same day. And if you don't know who's who, I mean, even if you can, it's hard to tell, but they are incredibly hard to tell apart. And that journey photographing them is all about documenting how identical they are and kind of making a visual, I guess like a visual book of sorts eventually to look back at to see how their differences have grown and how their similarities have grown and how things have changed. It's really interesting, honestly. They're terrifyingly identical. And then obviously families that I do photos for in Savannah that come back time and time again, year after year for photos. I've always said that's one of the most special parts about what I do is when they come back and I get to see these kids grow up from the other side of my camera. There's nothing like it.
And you, I would imagine an important component to being a photographer of people, you have to get them to be comfortable to some degree,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 100%. And I think...
to be natural and not do the pose.
And also when you're working fast, like these photo shoots with these families are usually about an hour or less. If the kids are younger, they don't usually last that long. Mm-hmm. Or doing photos with businesses. Or I have a project called It's a Thursday that's all about spontaneity.
Yeah. Tell me more about that. I read it on, I think, Instagram or your website, but what is
so
that?
So that project is interesting. It's very different from the other things I've done, but I actually started this project right after I took the first photo for this Exodus body of work. And I was diving into a lot of trauma, reading old journals and discovering things that happened to me as a kid that I had forgotten about or blocked out. Anyways, I needed something that was more fun, and I had just gone through a weird breakup situation thing, and my friend Maggie Hayes brought me to Savoy because she had a show opening there, and this was in February 2021, and it was kind of like the first time that I felt comfortable going somewhere without this former person situationship, and it kind of just showed me, like, I can do things on my own. This is a good place. This is somewhere that she'll probably never go, so...
yeah.
I started taking pictures there and it just kind of blew up. And by Halloween of 2021, I took a bunch of pictures there and I knew I wanted to make a first book of it. And I did that for the 1 year kind of anniversary, the first time I went in the first week of February. And now 3.5 years later, there's 3 books and I've done a show there. We've celebrated 3 anniversaries there. All the pictures are taken at Savoy Society. I forgot to mention that
downtown
part.
Savannah.
Yeah, in Drayton.
And they also have another location called Colleagues and Lovers on Habersham or something.
Yeah. I was there last night taking pictures for someone's birthday.
Sweet.
But it kind of took on a life of its own. The first book was more of like a gift for the staff that I also did sell because there were pictures of patrons in it. And then the second book was released with the show that we did there in July. And that was more of a curated book of all the little Polaroids. And it was like 400 pages long. It was a huge book. Wow. And I covered the walls.
Bound and everything?
Yeah.
Wow, that's exciting.
Self-published and sold like 200 of those. It was really awesome. And I covered the walls, and I think the final number was like 6,000 Polaroids. I've taken well over 15,000 at this point, 3 years later.
So how did you attach them to the wall?
To make it easier to not like destroy their walls and also take 15 hours to do it.
Yeah.
I scanned in all the Polaroids and made these
prints on paper,
basically like prints that were a foot wide by like 13 feet long. And they have these pillars in Savoy. There's 3 or 4 of them, I don't remember. And we printed them and covered every side of them. And there was no like repeated photo. So it was a lot of pictures. And then I had hard copy Polaroids on the wall. We had slideshows. We had photos all around the room. It was really awesome. And this past February, a few months ago, was the 3-year anniversary. And we actually hung up some of the former pieces from the show and some new ones, had the slideshow on. It's just kind of a showcase of how many pictures have been taken there. But that book that came out with the show was a lot more curated of a bunch of pictures. And then for the 2-year anniversary, I made the It's a Thursday, the Book of Everything, which is 925 pages long and about 8.5 pounds. It's huge.
Well, how big is the book? Like,
it's like that big. It's like it's thick. It's a heavy boy.
4 inches thick. But what about the scale? Is it 10 by 12 or 12 by 12?
I think it might be 9 by 12. I think.
Wow.
Maybe a little bigger.
Hardcover.
Hardcover. Got a dust jacket. No, so that one, the other books I did sell, but this one I made specifically for the 2-year anniversary, and I only made 4 copies. I had one for myself, one for the bar, one for Jane Fischel, who owns Savoy and CNL, and then I raffled one off, and a friend of mine got that one. So I didn't sell that one because in order to make a profit off of it, I would have had to sell it for a pretty penny because they were so expensive to make, but no complaining here. Happy to have done it. But that one I never really sold. I mean, if people ask about it, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
How many photos do you think you've taken?
At Savoy?
No, just, I mean, if you have books that are 900 pages, I'm imagining.
In a general sense, how many pictures do I think
like
I've taken?
You probably have towers.
Just Savoy, like the Polaroids there? Or no, in my whole career?
Your whole career.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I have no idea. Probably 10 million. I don't know. I've been taking pictures since I was a kid, and this has been my full-time job since I was, well, I guess not full-time job, but this has been my job since I was 13. I shot my first wedding when I had just turned 14, like 2 days before. So this is all I've ever known. I've worked like maybe 2 service industry jobs and 1 retail job that I quit after a week. This is just always what I've done, is babysit and take pictures, and now mostly just take pictures.
I think that's what I was asking, just to see
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. Like, even on my computer right now, just from 2 weeks, I've got probably 4,000 pictures on there because I've had a lot of shoots recently. And then come October, November, ain't no telling, because that's my busy time. And I take like 1,000 pictures per shoot just because my mom says I have a lead finger because I just hold the shutter down.
So that might be an interesting segue into the tools that you use.
Yeah.
Like, what's your favorite cameras? And then maybe how do you store these photos if you have such a large quantity?
Yeah.
Is it in the cloud? I don't know. Like, what does all this story look like?
Yeah. So equipment-wise, when it comes to the, I don't want to call it commercial work because it's not the right word, but the work I do to make money, my job photo shoots, the families, the business, or like businesses, events, all those things, my camera I use for that predominantly is a Nikon Z6 Pro 2. It's a mirrorless camera, and I love her. It's elevated my career quite a bit, I think.
Does she have a name?
Beatrice.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually do. I'm surprised I remembered that. I named it the day I got it. And that camera, I love. It's perfect. It's everything I need for what I do.
Is there a story behind Beatrice?
The name? Just, yeah. No, it literally just popped in my head when I got it. It was one of the... I love naming things. Mm-hmm. I always have since I was a kid, like naming stuffed animals, naming bugs that I find in the yard. Like, I love to name things, and I often name my cameras. But anyway, that's the one I use for all that type of work, and it's perfect. But for the work that's more like the Exodus body of work, or like any of my personal projects, those are always shot on film, like entirely. And Exodus is completely shot on the Victorian Wistafield 45. It's a wooden 4x5 camera, so it's a view camera, so the kind that you go under the cloak, like I said, to look through and expose. And that one I called the Elder Wista because of Harry Potter and the Elder Wand.
Yeah.
It's a Wistafield, so I call it the Elder Wista. Also, sweet. It's wooden, so yeah. It's perfect. And that is my favorite camera of all time. I acquired that camera from Sharon Fisher, who was married to Tom Fisher. He was a professor at SCAD and the head of the department at one point. He passed away in 2019, I believe, and his... Jacqueline, who's my mentor, that was her mentor, and she connected us, and I was able to get that camera, and I'm very thankful. A lot of people wanted it, and anytime somebody who knew him or had him as a professor find out that I have that camera, they're always like, what? How did you get that?
Yeah.
Like, I asked the right person, I guess, but it feels like an absolute honor to be able to take pictures with that camera to this day. It's very, very special. Great. And I don't know, I have so many cameras that I use, that I have.
What's a weird one? Like a random... Probably most people would think it's garbage, but you just like its quirks.
Okay, I have a great answer. My Olympus Pen EE2. It is a teeny, teeny, tiny 35mm camera, but it's a point and shoot, so you can control nothing on it, and it actually does tiny frames. So for every shot on a normal 35 camera, it's actually two. So if it's a 36 exposure roll, you're going to get twice as much because every frame actually has two. And the quality is shit. Like, it's so grainy and horrible, but it's so cute and fun to use.
Yeah.
And it works. The pictures still come out. And it would probably... I think it's less of a lens issue that they come out blurry. I think the glass that's over it is really, like, dirty,
no boy, no.
Dirty, dank, gross. Because it was my great-grandfather's, and who knows how long it's been around. But
how many cameras do you have?
Probably 200.
Really?
Yeah. My great-grandfather was a photographer in the Navy and was a hoarder of cameras. Whether or not they were plastic little shit cameras or really fancy cameras, my great-grandmother passed away after him in 2020. We had to go through their house, and it was a two-story house with an attic and a garage, with an attic above the garage, a studio in the front, and two studios in the back, and it was... insane. They
so
were.
So is that how you got into photography?
Yeah,
through
it was
your grandpa?
My great grandfather. Yeah, he was the professor of photography and videography at Ole Miss for, I don't know, I want to say 36 years. And my great grandmother was the head of the special collections library at Ole Miss. So
you're just meant to be a photographer.
I think
period.
So. I've always thought so. And my dad is. He does the videography. He used to work for the VA hospital doing videography, but now he works for, I think, the agricultural department. I don't really know what he does, honestly. It's kind of confusing. But he does something with videography and design work, and kind of trickled down into me. But
you mentioned that you have a studio at Cedar House. I'm assuming that's because you do film. Is that where you develop everything, or how does that work?
My studio at Cedar House is more of like a workspace with my scanner and my UV light box exposure for cyanotypes, and I meet clients there to talk about printing and all of those things. But I don't have a darkroom as of right now. When I was working on Exodus, I had access to the darkroom during the atelier, so that's where I developed everything. 4x5 is a little harder to develop in your house because you need a full darkroom, like an actual darkroom, versus 35mm, you can go into a dark room and load it and develop it like in your bathtub or whatever. But, well, maybe not your bathtub, but the 4x5, you have to have an entire space for it because it's not in a tank or anything, and I don't have the room for that right now. My goal is to eventually have a studio big enough to have a room that I can turn into a dark room that's not only for developing but for printing.
So talk more about that. What are some other dreams? Like, what would be an exceptional photo shoot or like that world?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of, do you mean like who, like a dream person to photograph?
Sure. Yeah. Huh. Or maybe an environment or a setting or a space. Yeah. What are some things that you aspire? What's the future look like? And if you got some cool gigs, what would those be?
Yeah. So I'd always love to have a foot in the work that I'm doing now with families. It's really cathartic for me. And I love meeting new kids and seeing old clients and watching the kids grow up. Like I said, is such a privilege. So I would like to always have a hand in that. But if I could do whatever I wanted and not have to worry about it making money, mm-hmm. I would definitely do what this like Exodus work is about. I would do more fine art film photography and do exhibitions just on a rotation constantly. And I feel
they like would I'm be portraits, I'm assuming.
Portraits and extended portraiture, which is a lot of what's in Exodus, is it's self-portraiture, but also extended self-portraiture. So like photographing objects and things that aren't necessarily my face that are self-representative.
I don't want to take too much more of your time. What's your favorite shot? Like, do you have a favorite image?
Like a favorite photo I've taken? That's an interesting question. Like I said, I took probably 10 million photos in my life.
Is there a special image or
Yeah. I think there's two or three photos from the Home Away From Home project that came to mind when you first said that, and those are definitely three of my favorite photographs I've taken, all with the 4x5 camera. One was an accidental double exposure of Ava. She's the twin that's neurotypical. And it was a complete accident. I was really pissed about it at first. And when I scanned it in, it was magical. I have it hanging in my house. I see it every day. And one of Ruby, who, like I said, she's nonverbal. But in this photo, we were blowing bubbles at her, trying to get her to smile. Even though she's smiling all the time, but we're just trying to get her to kind of look in our direction. And she has her hands clasped and she was shaking. She gets really tense because of the cerebral palsy. She was shaking because she was so happy and her eyes are shut and her smile is huge. And there's two giant pieces of drool hanging down out of her mouth because she was laughing so hard.
And you got it. You captured the moment.
I got the exact moment that I was looking for. And that was obviously in the show, but now it's at the Matthew Reardon Center for Autism. When that show was completed, all the work that didn't sell or that I didn't have space for in my home, I donated to them, and it's in their conference space in the rooms that they meet with parents to have kids come into the school.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I love it.
So she lives over there, but those, and then there's a few random ones of Danny and Benny that are definitely some of my favorite photographs I've taken just because they're so striking. Like I'll have to send you a picture of them or something, but they are incredibly striking humans, and when you put them in black and white, their big blue eyes and their blonde hair and their freckles.
Yeah, I
want
to see it. Like, I'd love to see it.
It's insane. So some of the photos of them are definitely on the top of my list, but I mean, I could go on. There's also photos I've done of my dad spreading his mom's ashes at her funeral that obviously have like a sting to my heart that means so much to me.
And yeah.
That was taken for another body of work that'll have its show eventually, but that's called The Habit of Being, documenting my dad's side of the family as people started to pass away, and I wanted to capture them while I could. So,
well, your work is inspiring. I really love the images that you're making.
Thank you.
And thankful for the opportunity to spend some time with you.
Yeah, well, this has been great talking to you as well. Thank you for giving me a space to speak.
Thank you.